You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to Every Voice Matters. I am your host, Dori Francis. A couple of things today. One, I want to send some prayers out to a friend, Marilyn, who just heard that she came out of surgery this morning and is doing well, but certainly want to feel that she is on her healing path. So if you can all keep her in your prayers, that would be great. I also want to thank Lake Tahoe Preparatory School today for sponsoring this show. At Lake Tahoe Preparatory School, they believe all their students deserve an education designed to meet them where they are in their academic journey. And those journeys are very different depending on each student. Lake Tahoe Preparatory School is uniquely positioned to offer all students a meaningful and fulfilling academic experience. And they do this by leading a program based on personalized attention. A campus visit is an authentic way to meet their students and learn about their experiences while touring their new spaces, including a new residence hall and sitting in on classes. While visiting, you'll quickly see they offer the best of a big school with all the benefits of a small one. And if anybody's ever been to the Lake Tahoe area, they know how beautiful it is there. To schedule a campus visit, please call 530-583-8665. And you can also visit their website at laketahoeprep.org. Today, I am very excited to welcome our guest, Dr. Stephanie Mines. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Hi, Dori. It's just a delight to be with you again.
So there is so much about Stephanie that if I told you everything, we would run out of time to actually have the show. But I want to say that she recently participated in the Kindred Media Fellowship Program. And I did put a link to a YouTube video and sent it out to quite a few people for them to look at some of these young women who are setting out on their careers as therapists and attorneys and trauma specialists and educators. And what an honor, Stephanie, for you to have been a part of that and to be, you know, a mentor with those people. I looked at the websites of, you know, for Robin Grill and Dr. Darcia Navarez, and it's called The Evolved Nest. Yeah. Amazing information on the site and a beautiful site as well.
Yes.
So I will make sure that that video also goes on Stephanie's page today for the show, for those of you who have not seen it. But today we're going to actually talk about some mentoring and anchoring and supporting our youth. And as Stephanie says, they are the inheritors of the world that we have failed to protect for them. And they are the leaders for the children of the future. And all that's going on in the world, I mean, there's just so much concern. We had quite a few people submit questions today for Stephanie, talking about neurodiversity challenges as well, and evolution and grief and despair. I mean, the list just goes on and on with how much is accelerating in the world today. I also want to mention that Stephanie has books called New Frontiers in Sensory Integration and They Were Families. Those are also listed on the website. And she just told me this morning she's got another new book coming out. We'll make sure all of her books are listed for you on her page as well for the radio show. So, Stephanie, thank you so much for being here today.
It's an honor, and I appreciate so much the opportunity to be a resource. And the questions that I read, of course, are heart-rending and completely understandable in the context of this very challenging world that we are sharing together.
What would you like to say for yourself as an introduction for the people who are listening today that you just feel comes from your heart about what you want to share with everyone today?
Well, first of all, I want everyone to know that I am a mother and a grandmother, and it is from that place that I do everything, actually. I am a neuroscientist. My focus in my graduate education was in traumatic brain injury, and I have done university. I am also a neuropsychologist and a trauma expert, and I am the founder of a training program that educates and empowers people to be embodiments of healthcare within their families and within their communities, as well as being a training program for therapists, of course. But I have been unique throughout my career in opening my programs to parents, to grandparents, to family members, to
all over the world.
All over the world, yes.
Yes.
And I love the community that comes together in my programs. And since 2016, I am the founder of Climate Change and Consciousness, which is linked with the TARA approach, my international training program in the treatment of shock and trauma. So climate change and consciousness represents really an extension of my understanding of the title of one of my books written 5 years ago and then reissued quite recently with a new adaptation. We Are All in Shock is the book that I wrote 5 years ago. My publisher contacted me and said this book was prescient and is more relevant now than ever before. Will you do some innovations and make it adaptable for this time? And so I did. And it is from that place of outreach and faith in humanity, and as a mother and a grandmother, that I do everything that I do. And that's my introduction from the heart.
That's just so beautiful. And you're just a beautiful person. I've always known that about you. I want to say that Stephanie has also been an editor on a couple of the books that I've been working on. And she and I will be connecting about that very, very soon.
Yay.
Well, we've got lots of questions, and let's just see where it takes us and leads us. And please share as much as you can. And I'm going to start off with Adam in North Carolina, who says, I have an 8-year-old son who is afraid we are going to die from COVID. How do I explain to him in ways that he can understand that I feel safe?
That's wonderful, Adam, that you feel safe. And that really exemplifies a larger message to many similar to Adam's question about how do I steward my children so that they do not go into despair,
yes,
so that they are not heartbroken at our situation. And we are heartbroken at our situation, but being heartbroken means an expansion of intelligence, awareness, and compassion. So the fact that you feel safe, Adam, is a keynote here. We want to mirror that safety back to our children. And what is it that makes us feel safe? So, Adam, I invite you to go deep into that feeling of safety that you have. And let me expand that by saying, at this challenging time, which offers us an incredible evolutionary opportunity that we must meet and that we will meet, I know that we will, we as parents, as educators, we need to go deeper. We need to be more aware of ourselves and understand experientially that the way that we feel is mirrored to our children,
yes,
in every single way.
Every single way.
And our children are so smart, and they're picking up all the dimensions of our feeling.
Yeah, they're little sponges.
They're little sponges, and it's our job to evolve ourselves so that we really meet them where they are and convey that sense of safety, that sense of confidence in human potential, not dishonestly, not with false promises, but with a real grasp of what is going on in the world. So we have to educate ourselves about that locally as well as globally. And why is it that we feel safe? And be able to articulate that and project that so our children rest in it.
That's very good insight in what is it that makes Adam feel safe so he can share that in a way that his child will understand. Amanda in Colorado says, how can I instill a sense of normal in my home when so much seems to be bombarding us every day?
Beautiful, beautiful question. I know that this is every parent's question and every educator's question. So we are evolving a new normal. We are not going back to an old normal. That's not going to happen.
It's not going. I agree with you. That's not going to happen. And I've heard people say, I can't wait to get back to how it was. That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And that's part of this going deeper and getting more real. And I would say getting more grounded and more connected. So I'm going to make a suggestion that meets this beautiful, beautiful, sincere question. For every parent and for every educator, the sense of safety and the sense of what does normal even mean now,
right,
is going to evolve out of our connection to nature. I am going to suggest that every parent, every educator, every therapist who serves children and families find their own deep relationship with the natural world, because that's where our safety rests. That's where our hope rests, is in our connection to the earth, to the natural world. And when we have that, and then we bring our children into that, and we can be discovering that connection with our children. That's beautiful. That is what is going to convey an original sense of normal, not normal in any status quo sort of way. Normal in that we all have a birthright of connection to the web of life. And that's one of our biggest challenges now, is to reestablish, because we have had it in the past. It's there for every single one of us. There's an indigenous ancestor. And there was a time when our families were deeply connected to the natural world. So we can remember that. We can bring that forward. That's what I recommend, to rediscover confidence, connection, and relationship to the natural world.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Andrew in Colorado is asking about teen suicide and wondering if this is becoming a pandemic.
It is tragic that I believe it is already a pandemic. And it breaks my heart. As I said, when the heart breaks, the heart opens even wider. I feel the losses deeply in my own body and the despair that our young people are feeling has to be met squarely. And one of the ways that we can address this and stop this pandemic is for adults to step into their mentorship. We can lessen the despair of adolescents in particular, who are so vulnerable to it, by showing them that we are with them, that we believe there is emergent, innovative intelligence on the rise, that we will meet this challenge, and that we will not abandon them. We will not betray them with our own despair, which doesn't mean to fake it, that you don't feel despair.
They will know.
They will know. I feel despair. I feel despair to some extent every day, but I know how to bounce out of it, not avoid it, not deny it, but rise up from it. And I've done that my whole life. I've done that as a trauma survivor myself. I've done it as someone who believes in civil rights. I've done it as someone who has been an activist. And that is what our young people need to know. That's what I convey. I know how to rise out of despair. I know how to meet these challenges. It's that confidence that will convey to our young people that they are backed up by us. And we don't want to steal their sovereignty and their authority in making their own decisions, but we want them to know that we are there with them.
So they don't feel so alone and like they're having to make these decisions without support. Yep. And that needs to happen in the schools as well, not just at home. I mean, wherever these kids are, they need to feel that support.
Absolutely.
Beth in Colorado says, what is the most challenging parts of raising children in the U.S. today?
Unfortunately, everything is challenging.
Yes, right now everything is challenging.
Everything is challenging. I think it's challenging to anchor our children and give them a route to evolve their intelligence, because we're so distracted by all the bad news that it becomes difficult to focus on education and moving forward. And again, and I've said this always, before the pandemic, before the climate crisis was in our face the way it is now, I have always said, and I know you have also, Dory, as an educator yourself, that parents model what they want to transmit to their children. So I, for instance, am modeling for my daughters and my granddaughters that I will not stop being a productive intelligence. That's why I am so excited to dive into this new book that I'm writing, because it gives me the space to really develop the innovative intelligence, which is, and I'll use the word birthright again, because I believe it's a very important word, because we have a birthright of the intelligence to meet these challenges. I know without one shred of doubt that we have everything that we need to meet all these challenges.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but you know, people are feeling like they don't have what they need is what I'm hearing. And they're going into despair. And it does take that internal self-work. You just can't wait for it to happen. It is going to be challenging. It is going to take time. It is going to take work.
I'm so glad you're saying this, because
there's no magic switch.
No, and that's why I've developed programs within the Tara approach and also within climate change and consciousness. So I really hope people will go on to those websites.
Yes, I will make sure they have that information.
In both of those programs, and they're linked, but they're also different in certain ways. So the TAR approach is primarily for creating a groundswell of sustainable healthcare at the grassroots level. And that is where I've deposited what I call a cultural library of sustainable health resources that are accessible to everyone, so that within our families and within our communities, we can meet the health consequences of the climate crisis and all the other crises, all of which are related to the climate crisis. But climate change and consciousness can help enormously in giving you, first of all, a community for dialogue. And we are developing programs that are intended to help you tap into that birthright that I'm talking about. And these are programs open to everyone. And we do our level best to make them as thoroughly accessible as possible. So, and I can tell brief vignettes, if you want to hear them at some point, of people who have come into these programs and who have, as a result, stepped forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the work that you've done over the over many years, it's passing from person to person, and then they're passing it from person to person. So, I mean, really what you've created, Stephanie, is something that's not a one-time situation. It's permeating out across the world through the work that you've done.
Absolutely. And there's great beauty in that, Dori, that I feel personally, because I participate in these programs myself. Mm-hmm. We have a Resilient Communities program going on right now, which really speaks to the needs that many of the questions address. And it is really incredible to be in a program with parents in Africa, parents in Australia, parents in Europe, and parents throughout the U.S., and recognize how we're all dealing with the same issues together and how we can support each other. I want to emphasize that the programs in both the Tara Approach and Climate Change and Consciousness, they're not lectures.
Right.
Yes. These are participatory, engaged, active, co-collaborative programs, and people's lives are transformed as a result. And that's where the hope and the confidence and the inspiration that we need, not to deny the despair, but to resilience is the buoyancy that bounces off of that trampoline. The despair has to be acknowledged. It's actually when we make space for it that we can bounce into the confidence and intelligence. This intelligence is not a PhD intelligence. I have a PhD, you have a PhD, but that's not the intelligence I'm talking about.
This is an internal fire really within that lights somebody.
Yes. And I really want to reach out to everyone listening to let you know that I know you have that intelligence. Please do not underestimate yourself. And that intelligence is easier and more natural to access than you ever learned in school.
That's right. So Brad in Utah, you know, asks, are youth suicides growing because of the COVID?
I think COVID is part of it. COVID is very scary. The Delta variant is especially scary. It's virulent. It's nasty. And there is a lot of fear about that. And I think there's also a lot of fear, whether it's identified or not, about the climate crisis. And what is the future of humanity? And there is a lot of despair. And it is actually by facing it squarely, seeing it's understandable, and then countering it with this understanding that this is a time of human evolution. And the challenges, the life-threatening challenges that we face, are in some ways the fuel, the friction, the stimulus for a neuroevolution. So as a neuroscientist, one of the areas that I have focused on, continue to focus on, is neurodevelopment.
Yes.
And I became an embryologist as a result of my interest in this topic. How does the brain evolve? So even if we think in a very basic way about birth and the prenatal period, the brain is evolving as a result of many life-threatening events that happen prenatally and during the birthing process. No matter how you might have come into the world, cesarean or vaginal delivery, the entire sequence of early life is fraught with threat. And that's not something that is theoretical. This is scientifically documented. And Gabor Mate speaks to it. My mentor, Peter Levine, speaks to it. It's evident. The evolution of the brain is the product product of those life-threatening challenges. So we are in a rebirth, a time of rebirth, a time of new becoming. And if we can make space to allow the magnitude of threat to help us evolve, help us become deeply and profoundly creative, it may sound odd, but you might even find joy in that process.
I think people can find joy in that process when they allow it to happen and don't stay stuck in fear and despair.
The joy also comes in being able to share, building community.
Yes, building communities, absolutely. And starting to see some of that, you know, little bits at a time. But I sure would like to see more. Instead of all this negativity of people separating from each other, we have so much power together that we really have more in common than we have differences. If people would just stop and just take a breath for a moment and really see that we're so strong together.
And you're doing that with this radio show. And this is what happens in climate change and consciousness and in these resilient community programs that are ongoing. I just did a program called Voice Your Truth, which is similar. Every time we build community, even if we come into that community with our despair, and people do.
Of course.
We share that and people resource one another.
Yes.
And evolve together. And that is really a significant component of this transition, is building community.
Carol in Georgia says, how can we as individuals help with the climate change mess?
Thank you, Carol, for that question. The fact that you even ask it warms my heart, because we can help. We can help with reestablishing and deepening our connection to the natural world and the web of life, and sharing that with our children. We can help by growing our own food. I was sharing with Dory, because our friendship started in Boulder, Colorado, where we had the delight of being together physically. And I have relocated to rural Oregon, where we have an organic farm. I don't come from a farming background. I was born in the Bronx, New York, kind of the opposite of farming. But we now grow all our own food. I don't have to go to the grocery store for much of anything. So I'm not saying that you have to start an organic farm, but start to grow your own food to some extent, and do that with your children.
That it can be little things, you know, like you said, it doesn't have to be a whole farm, but it can be little things. You know, peppers and tomatoes. And I have a friend who's growing cucumbers in her backyard. And
it's amazing what you can grow, even in your, in an urban setting, in your apartment or your house or your condo, you know,
herbs and spices. Yes.
One of the programs we're about to offer through Climate Change and Consciousness is about foraging, about how to find the food that may already be growing in your environment. So starting to find new food sources and exploring that as a collective event with family or with community, that it may seem too small. But it's not.
Right. It doesn't matter how small it is. It all makes a difference.
Refusing plastics. That's a big one. And I can tell you stories of people, for instance, Flossie Donnelly in Ireland. When I was creating the first Climate Change and Consciousness event, I met Flossie Donnelly. And Flossie was 12 years old at that time. And she lives on the coast of Ireland, and she was so upset about the plastic at the beaches and in the water. And she, at the age of 12, I think she might have started at 11, she organized people in her village to just go down on the weekend and collect the plastics. And this grew and grew and grew until Flossie connected with someone who had created this machine that actually sucks the plastics out of the ocean. And this person donated the machine to Flossie. Pretty wow. soon, Flossie had the whole coast of Ireland engaged in campaigns to pick up plastics. So, you know, I'm not saying you have to organize a campaign. You don't have to be that kind of activist.
Just do it in your own neighborhood.
Just do it in your own neighborhood. Refuse the plastic bags at the grocery store. Talk to the person at the grocery store for an alternative. There are cloth bags that are reusable.
Yes. Chris, you know, talking about coming from New York, we have a question here from Chris in New York. He says, we live in a city where there seems to be violence every day. You know, how do I protect my children from all of the news and what they hear at school and from their friends?
Such an important question. And not so easy to answer.
Because... No, I don't think there's any one answer. I mean, we're all trying to do the best we can with what we know, with where we live in the moment of everything happening. And things are changing. I mean, I won't even say things are changing daily. Sometimes they're changing by the hour.
So I would say to this beautiful, beautiful question, all the questions are so beautiful. Create a space in your home where it is safe for your children to express their fears about this violence. Create a family gathering, maybe even a community gathering. And we also do this through Climate Change and Consciousness, where you feel safe and you can learn the tools to increase the safety of that communication. We're about to launch a program. And these are not programs that I facilitate. It's community members facilitating them. I facilitate some, but the ones coming up, for the most part, I'm not facilitating because I'm going to be writing a book. And we have brilliant people in our community, very gifted. We're about to launch some honoring circles where you can learn the tools of creating that safety. And that will be an evolution for you. Give your children, your family members, your community members, the opportunity to express their feelings about the violence. And don't judge it. Don't try to solve it. Don't try to fix it. Just allow it to be there. Do your best to not react to it. That's yes. one of the gifts of an honoring circle. And then see what evolves out of that. Let yourself build a community response. And this has been a great teaching for me. Dory knows me so well, and she knows that I'm a doer, you know, and we both come from a background that makes us try to rescue. We have that impulse to rescue. This is probably one of the greatest teachings of my life. It's an ongoing teaching, and I will say that as I learn this lesson over and over again, it expands my intelligence. Don't rescue. Don't try to rescue. And when you quiet that rescuing impulse, you let a collective emergence happen. And you become part of a collaborative solution to a problem. And that solution might come from your children. You might be surprised.
Yes, they actually have a lot to share when you listen.
Yeah. And then you realize not only that there are solutions that you might never think of, but that there are solutions that involve a collaborative experience. You're doing something together. And that takes such a weight off your shoulders. It's quite liberating.
Yeah, we don't have to do it alone. Craig in Colorado says, what's your opinion about the state of mental health right now in the United States?
I think we're having a mental health crisis.
Yep.
I think it's global. It's not just the United States. It's global, but certainly in the United States.
Yeah.
And
everybody's again, talking about it. Everybody. Yes.
And we have to face it squarely. And I will say this as someone with an advanced degree, that I am not sure that the authorities, the experts, some might call me an expert. I'm not saying we have the solutions. I think the solutions must come from a groundswell. And I think the solutions actually might come from the natural world. But first of all, we have to recognize that we're in a mental health crisis. And as we're realizing, and this has contributed to our despair, as we're realizing that the authoritative structures cannot solve our problems, have failed to the problems.
Absolutely. And are continuing to do so, I think, well, I have a lot of opinions about that.
Yeah.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah. So as we realize that, you know, a lot of people, and we all know people like this, can sit around and talk about that a lot.
Yes.
You know, you can badmouth all this one or that one. That doesn't solve the problem.
It doesn't solve the problem. There has to be more empathy and compassion to doing instead of just saying and talking. And I don't mean any disrespect to anybody, but if I hear another mindfulness, you know, I'm going to do mindfulness. I'm going to teach mindfulness. We're going to cure you with mindfulness.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Dory.
I ask people what that means, and I get a different answer every time.
So, yeah, I'm so with you. That was courageous, and I applaud you for saying that.
I'm going to get some flack from that one, but.
Well, you won't get it from me. So, you know, Rebecca Solnit wrote an incredible book before the pandemic, before we were dealing so forthrightly with the climate crisis, called Paradise Built in Hell. And in that book, she documents times of enormous crisis on the scope of what we're dealing with now.
Right.
And she documents how communities came together. She also documents how authoritative structures then tried to belittle or diminish the power of how communities come together, because those communities came together organically, just by being neighborly, by being compassionate, by caring about each other. And then the authorities would come in and try to systemize everything without a knowledge of the communities themselves. So what she is implying in the title, Paradise Built in Hell, is that in the face of disaster, the grassroots actually has some great ideas and great instincts. You know, soup kitchens would form, for instance, when people didn't have access to food.
Right.
Somebody would create a place where they could cook soup for the neighborhood, you know. Or in Puerto Rico, this is another example. In Puerto Rico, you know, with Hurricane Maria, there were no resources.
Right.
No healthcare resources. We had people, we still have people in Puerto Rico who need support from a healthcare facility that doesn't respond, that isn't there. And what happened was the parteras, the curanderas would come out of the woodwork, you know, the village grannies would come forward with the remedies that they had known for ages that had been passed down to them and start to take care of people. And people not only started to get better, they started to get healthier because they were using herbal remedies.
And healthier, then they can then help others as well. Yes.
And that's what we need to let happen now. And that's part of the paradigm that I'm creating for sustainable health and my cultural library. I don't in any way, and I mean this really sincerely, I do not in any way mean to belittle Western medicine. It has incredible value.
Absolutely. Yep.
But there are alternatives that are not fluky or quirky. These are alternatives that have been known for ages, for hundreds and hundreds of years to be effective, and they still are effective. And those are the ones that are in relationship to the natural world that are available for us.
Well, I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit. Don in Washington says, you know, what is your opinion about climate change? And then Donald in Texas actually asks, is climate change caused by humans?
It's caused by humans, and it can be met by human intelligence. We can do this, folks. We can do this. It means food sourcing, being more independent.
It means making changes.
It means making changes.
Not being uncomfortable in the easy, but actually making some changes.
And those, I would say those are good changes.
Yes.
I would say those are good changes.
Our children need that. And as you had said, as I'd said in the introduction, you know, our children are going to be the leaders of our future. And, you know, we need to be teaching them now.
One of the things we do in the Resilient Communities gatherings is we actually ask everyone to do a climate footprint assessment, a carbon footprint assessment, and see, you know, really what is your carbon footprint in your home? And it's humbling.
It's very humbling.
But it's very important, because what's clear is that historically, and this is what has produced our climate crisis, we are using more carbon than one planet could possibly use. We're using like the carbon of two or three planets. So how can we make simple changes that really don't make our lives uncomfortable at all? They make our lives more natural and reasonable. I mean, there's not really a big sacrifice, you know, to recycling, and just recycling don't do it, but little things, turning off lights, using less water, etc. Not going to the store.
It just really bothers me when in my community where I live, recycling is paid for. All you have to do is do it and put it out and they'll come pick it up. 50% of the people living around me do not recycle.
And that's angering.
It's like I want to go over and pull stuff out of their trash can and put it in my recycling bin. And it's just this I don't care attitude, and it's not going to affect me, or I'm old, so what does it matter? Or, yeah.
So I want to just say a couple things about that. It's very upsetting to hear that, of course.
Yes.
And something I've learned that might be valuable to the listeners is we have to pick our battles. And this is something that climate change and consciousness helps people do, because there's so much we could be angry about and frustrated about
every day.
But I want to use Flossie Donnelly as an example, because there was a lot that Flossie Donnelly was upset about, but the thing she was really upset about was the plastics. And that, so she focused on that.
On that one thing.
Yeah. And she went not to the people who would say, I'm old anyway, it doesn't matter. And I want everybody to know that I am old. I am old and it matters. But she picked what really got her on fire. And as a result, she changed the whole coast of Ireland.
Doug in Idaho says, when my child asks me if I feel scared about something, and I am, how honest should I be in telling them?
Be completely honest, but rehearse that with yourself before, and then listen to yourself through the eyes of your child, whatever age your child might be. And really be fully empathic. And for just a moment, drop in to their state of development and see how your fear will affect them, and be prepared for that. Be prepared to not leave them with that honesty, but go deeper into your experience and talk about how you recover or how you respond to that fear, so that they see that you're being completely vulnerable, completely open, but that you also have an intelligence that leads out of that hole that you fall into, because your brain as an adult anchors and mirrors the brain of your child. And that is, we could talk about it neurologically in terms of mirror neurons, etc., but that lingo is not valuable. Right. What's valuable is to understand that the way that you behave, and particularly the ways in which you're unconscious about your behavior, is mirrored by your child, is witnessed by your child. And we want to be prepared for that by seeing how they're experiencing us through their eyes.
We have so many questions that we are not going to get to. You're definitely going to come back, Stephanie.
I definitely want to.
And, you know, I just want, you know, to say, so as you wrap up with us today, what would be the most important thing? And I'm going to put lots of information on your page when, you know, for people to re-listen to this show and to have resources for them. But what would you say, you know, is the most important thing that you want to leave people with today, you know, who just really are scared about what's happening?
I would say to each one of you that I resonate with and understand your fear. And I will repeat the name of your radio show here. Every voice matters. Your voice matters. And know that you can use that fear, use that terror as a trampoline, a source of the kind of stimulus you need to express for your children and for all children the faith that you have in human potential, and the faith and love that you have for life.
And for yourself.
And for yourself.
Yeah, don't forget yourself. I think a lot of people forget themselves.
Yeah. And know that the natural world is here. The natural world also loves us and is waiting for us to be in communication with all the aspects of the natural world, the animals, the plants, the trees. I now live in an ancient forest populated by so many bird species, and these parts of nature are in direct communication with me. And there's many books being written right now. I really know there is a wave of intelligence that's rising, bouncing off of the natural world.
Yeah.
And so don't disregard your fear, but use it as a stimulus. And as Dory just said, believe that that natural intelligence, your original brilliance, will rise up in you.
Thank you, Stephanie, so much for being here today. And I will be reaching out to you personally myself. Definitely want to have you come back and share everything that you're doing. I'll make sure all your books are listed on the site, your Terra Approach site, your consciousness site. You have so much wisdom to give. I hope at some point along this journey, I'm actually going to get to come out and visit you in your magical forest and see what you're doing. I mean, you had a magical place here in Boulder as well. So I can only imagine what you've created there in Oregon, which is actually a favorite place of mine. So I hope that at some point the world will allow us to have that safe visit.
And, me too.
Many blessings to you and your family. And I will look forward to talking with you soon again.
Thank you for inviting me, Dory, and waves of inspiration to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. I once again want to thank Lake Tahoe Preparatory School for sponsoring today's show with Dr. Stephanie Mines. And again, you know, Lake Tahoe Preparatory School believes in all their students. They believe in a robust education designed to meet them where they are in academic journey. And those journeys are very different depending on each student. Lake Tahoe Preparatory School is uniquely positioned to offer all students a meaningful and fulfilling academic experience. And they do this by leading a program based on personalized attention. So honestly, if you haven't been to the Lake Tahoe area yet, a campus visit is an authentic way to meet their students and learn about their experiences. And while touring, you'll get to see their new spaces. They have a new residence hall, and you can actually sit in on some classes. So while visiting, you'll quickly see they offer the best of a big school with all the benefits of a small one. You can schedule a campus visit by calling 530-583-8665, and you can visit their website at laketahoeprep.org. Next week, my guest is going to be Jared Rockwood, and he's the owner of Intermountain Polygraph Services, and he's going to talk about how polygraph is used to create safety in residential treatment environments through fostering honesty and disclosure. Today, I'd like to end, I always end with a positive thought for the day. Think kind thoughts. And this really meshes in with Dr. Stephanie Mind's words that she shared with us today. Speak words of kindness, act with kindness, and make kindness your state of being. We absolutely can continue to change our world for the better. Take care, everyone. See you next week.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.